Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
This show is brought to you by Doc Sports Services. Today on Listen In with KNN, I'm welcoming in Rafael Esperanza of Doc Sports Service and MyBookie.ag odds consultant. Rafael will join me right here on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. Yes, this show is for all of you who enjoy betting and gambling on your sports picks. Do you have what it takes to win? And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag ListenInWithKNN. Now, this week, we will be getting straight into our action-packed show right after this quick commercial break. Stay tuned. Looking for winning sports picks and predictions? Since 1971, Dot Sports has been recognized as one of the most trusted names in the sports handicapping industry. For the listeners of this very show, Doc Sports is giving out $60 worth of their premium member picks for free. These are the exact same premium member picks that 1,000 of their current members pay for. And guess what? You get them for free. Just text the word radio to the number 29022. Text radio to the number 29022 for instant access. Doc Sports also provides free picks on every single game. You want NBA picks? Simply Google search Docs NBA Picks, NHL Picks, Google search Docs NHL Picks. Need MLB Picks? Google search Docs MLB Picks. Remember to text the word radio to the number 29022 and start winning today with Doc Sports Service. Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now the time to welcome in the man doing it big in Viva Las Vegas, Mr. Rafael Esparza. Rafael, how are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I am wonderful. I'm always jealous anytime I have someone from Vegas on this show. I wish you could bring some of that fun here to the nation's capital.
People always think it's fun visiting, but living here, I tell people it's a totally different, especially for
it's
what
different.
I do for a living. Living here is totally different, and that's why I try to get out of the state of Nevada as many times as possible than actually, and especially now that we're getting pro sports teams. I think I've been calling LA East instead of Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's changing, right? I mean, now it's just hard to imagine probably even 10 years ago that people would think about Las Vegas as a sports town, right? And now
you guys are going to have everything. Yeah, if you would
have
asked me that 10 years ago, I would have said there's no way. If you would have asked me that after the NBA All-Star game was there a couple of years ago, almost 10 years ago, I would have said no way because that was a really bad black eye for the city of Las Vegas, what happened throughout the whole city during that event. So it's just crazy now that we have an NHL team, going to have an NFL team, going to have probably an MLS team pretty soon. So it's nuts in Las Vegas for the sports world.
Wow. So just tell me, I mean, overall, since you've lived in Las Vegas, I mean, tell me kind of, take me through the pros and cons of what you think Las Vegas kind of being a sports town now. What will it do for the residents of Las Vegas? You know, will it help them or hurt them?
I think it will help them, and it's just, I've been telling people, I've never seen Las Vegas just accept the Las Vegas or the Vegas Golden Knights right now. I wasn't in the city of Las Vegas when UNLV was winning championships in college basketball, so I can't.
The good times.
Yeah, the good times of bringing JUCO players and winning national championships. But I wasn't in the city then, but what I've experienced now with the Golden Knights in Las Vegas, it's shocking. It reminds me that I'm like in my old stomping grounds of Chicago when the Blackhawks were winning, or Detroit with the Red Wings. That's what the town feels like right now. So they accepted it, but you in Las Vegas, I have a feeling you have to win in order to get the crowds, because I've seen UNLV basketball games. They haven't been winning in the stadium. So it's going to be very interesting to see if the Raiders win right away, because if it's not, we might see some empty seats in the stands.
And we know that's not what they want. They're looking to go there and, you know, really be a force. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up that point, because I think here in D.C., at least with basketball, when the Wizards are winning, it's pretty packed. But when they're losing, you know, it's not as many people in the stands. So it seems like Vegas kind of goes with that. But I think, I mean, Vegas, it seems like it's all about winning, right? So it makes sense kind of that goes over to the sports side of things. But the Golden Knights, I mean, yeah, the Golden Knights, I mean, they've been just tremendous. So at least they've been great to watch. And then the Raiders, it'll be interesting to see how things turn over for them and if they're able to have success when the franchise relocates. And, of course, how the fans will feel from Oakland, and seeing if they will all carry over to being Las Vegas sports fans now.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. And then people keep on forgetting, we even have a WBA team, the San Antonio Silver Stars are
and I was
on
so
all the
excited
Vegas
about
aces.
That.
So
yes.
I'll wave to you because I'll probably be the only one at those games. So I'll probably be either coaching or probably even be a ball boy.
No, but honestly, I'm glad to hear you'll be there because honestly, and I preach this all the time, I wish the WNBA had more people come to the games. And honestly, I know Vegas is like a very different place for the team to be, but hopefully they give it a chance because there is great basketball being played. And that just tells you that when you have a WNBA team, it's official. You really are a sports town.
I agree, even though the betting public is not betting them to win at all, as I think as an NBA follower
yeah.
as myself, it's going to be hard to beat Minnesota this year. Again, they're just so stacked. We got them at
so
even
good,
money.
Yeah.
LA Sparks plus 140.
Yep.
The Las Vegas Aces right now 80-1. So we're not expecting them to win the championship.
Wow, talk about they really are going to have to defy the odds if they are able to do anything in the WNBA. And now let's get into you, Raphael. So I want to read your bio for people that might not know you and might not fully understand what you do, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, not a problem.
All right, wonderful. So the motto is, you pick the sport, he picks the winners. Remember that. That's the way Raphael Esparza likes it. Raphael is one of the most versatile, most consistent, and most successful handicappers in the entire country, and he is looking forward to his best fall and winter yet. If you have never played alongside the man formerly known as the Vegas Sports Informer, then you are costing yourself money every single day, folks, yes, and in almost every single sport you can bet on. Raphael earned more than 13 years of experience as a sportsbook manager at four of the biggest, most well-known sportsbooks on the Las Vegas Strip. He has more than 20 years of handicapper and gambling experience, combined with more than a decade's worth of experience running some of the sharpest shops on the Strip. His years behind the counter have given him a unique perspective on sports gambling, and he has seen it and done it all at the heart of America's gambling mecca. Raphael has contacts and access to the sharpest lines in action and industry, and that has translated to windfall profits for his clients over the last several years. He is one of the first to know about crucial factors like line movements, injuries, and behind-the-scenes information, folks, so keep that in mind. It keeps him one step ahead of the public and has helped him become one of the top handicappers in the nation. Raphael has taken gambling knowledge to being one of the top odd maker consultants for one of the top offshore books in the world with MyBookie.ag. His contacts are not only in Las Vegas, but also he has contacts that are worldwide, and that makes him one of the most dangerous handicappers and overall a sports gambling professor. Very impressive, Raphael. Bio, if I must say so myself. But for those that might not fully know the gambling world, how would you say, let's say in layman terms, how would you explain what a handicapper does?
Well, what a handicapper does is they pretty much handicap the game and figure out the mm-hmm. insights of maybe the public does not know or the public may not realize. So some people don't realize that a lot of these teams have played each other before, so we know that mm-hmm. what the numbers were when they played before. We know certain injuries that maybe the public may not know. So for me, working in the gaming industry, I mean, I worked for MGM Mirage for over 15 years, ran a couple of their sports books. For me, I still have all those contacts, so I can call up to any sports book in the state of Nevada or even offshore where I have connections in Costa Rica, England, Ireland, and all that, when I can see what kind of action they're getting. So I'm getting a little bit more information than a normal public person would get, so I think that helps my edge. And no matter what I do, if it's either gambling, writing articles, talking to mm-hmm. you, I can give the listener or the reader a little bit more news than just a normal Joe that's actually doing the same stuff.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. And just, I mean, so tell me, I mean, when did you realize that this was what you wanted to do as a career? And then what advice would you give to people who want to kind of get into the same thing that you're currently doing?
I got into, I mean, I've always been into the sporting world. Even when I was in high school, I was playing sports, but then I couldn't play anymore due to an injury. And I always wanted to be around it. And I always thought, I thought it was very interesting, the number basis of sports gambling and sports betting and all that. And I could tell people it's almost like the stock market, but you're just watching sports. I mean, it's all about numbers. And I know
that's
sports gambling and DRF, daily, all the daily fantasy sports. I know we all get black eyes with all that, but it's just like the stock market. We're playing numbers. We're not actually playing like certain aspects of teams or telling teams to do badly. We're just actually playing numbers. And if you're going to make fun of me or yell at me, then why don't you yell at the people who are actually like stockbrokers who are actually losing more money than what we're actually
putting in.
So I look at it that way, and I always looked at it that way. So I always thought it was myself as a sports trader more than a sports gambler.
I like that. Very well said. And then just tell me, though, for those that look at this world as kind of like, oh, it's not good for sports and they don't understand why people are doing it, what would you say to those kind of critics of your industry?
If it wasn't for sports gambling, the NFL would not even be as close to it as it was before. I used to talk to a lot of former athletes that I met in Vegas and who I still contact now. And I even did a poll a couple games I used to attend, and I would ask the crowd of before they were going in, do you know the point spread of the game? And everybody knew who the point spread of the game. And I just think it's especially for the NFL, I think it's for if you throw gambling aside, it's pretty much made what the NFL is now. And now you're seeing leagues accepting it and wanted to endorse it and promote it. The NBA says, hey, I think we should finally get into the times like they do in English Premier League soccer, where you see all the betting ads on the fields and the parlors all over the place in England, where you can place soccer bets pretty much at any 7-Eleven over there. They have a little kiosk where you can bet, and I would not be shocked if the U.S. does not go that towards that way in the next 10 years, because there's so much money to be made for all signs, bars, businesses, and all that, not even the gambling purposes. But if you put in a kiosk in a bar, you're going to have actually more people attending, because they can place a bet in there, sit there, watch their game, drink some adult beverages, and eat.
Right. I mean, it makes sense. It does. It makes sense. And I think, you know, more often we see even more states, you know, accepting gambling, and people really see it as a source of revenue. And you know, sometimes the money's going to good causes, but I had to have you say that because I know when the show comes out, there is going to be people, you know, who are still against that world. And that's why I wanted you to explain that. And I'm glad you explained that side of it. And then last but not least, I mean, kind of where do you see the world of kind of sports betting and gambling? Where do you see it headed into the future?
Well, I mean, if it ever gets legalized in the states, I think it's unlimited, because I think, like I said, I think each state will probably be responsible. I don't think it's going to be legal in every state. I just don't see Utah and Montana and those states accepting those. But I think the major cities like New Jersey, out in the South, New Orleans, Mississippi, Texas, California, I think they're all going to start accepting it. I think it's going to be just like it's going to be like in England, where you're going to be watching a game and you're not going to be shocked that you see an MGM Resorts betting app logo on the field, or even on their jerseys. Yeah. So like say NASCAR, I would not be shocked if you start seeing gambling ads on NASCAR if it ever gets legalized. I think for all parties, especially I said local businesses and stuff like that, that maybe can establish it and put like stuff on there, I think it's going to benefit all parties.
Okay, and that makes sense. And just let me just ask you this, though, too, as a follow-up. I mean, do you think there's any cautions, let's say, if it were to get legalized more? I mean, do you think there's any cautions that, you know, politicians and even local constituents should heed if it grows bigger than it already is?
There's always going to be caution. I mean, there's caution with alcohol. There's caution now that weed is being legalized in states. I mean, anything you do, there's always going to be caution. There's caution about driving a car. There's caution about jumping on an airplane and going somewhere. So, yes, I understand the people about, but what about the addiction, addicted to gambling? Well, there's people addicted to internet porn. There's people addicted to drugs and alcohol. And I mean, there is going to be goods and there's also going to be a lot of bad. So it just, you have to accept it. And hopefully those people who need help get the help.
I mean, I think you just said it well. That's why I'm glad. Again, I like to play both sides. I like to be objective, and that's why I wanted to make sure that we get to hear both sides. I appreciate you diving into those questions. All right, now I'm excited to get into my first segment of the show, Doing It Big in the DMV. And I know you're in Vegas, but I'm going to bring you over to the East Coast as we're about to talk some football and talk the Washington Redskins. And interestingly enough, Raphael, the big news this week with the Redskins were all about Bruce Allen. And so rumors started circulating last week that Bruce Allen and John Gruden of the Oakland Raiders, we were just speaking about them, had mutual interest in a reunion. So Redskins fans, some of them were happy. Just thinking that his 8-plus year tenure with the team, which has he's been in various roles with the team, and his record of 52-75-1 and a winning percentage of 410, some people were basically pretty happy that he might be gone. Seemed like the majority of the fans were, but guess what? It was, he put it out there, he's not going anywhere. He shot all of the rumors down. And so for some people, they liked that. Some people, they didn't. And this is a quote that he said in an interview where he shot those rumors out, where he shot those rumors down. He said, well, first of all, I do like the silver and black. And I think that Mark Davis and Reggie McKenzie and John Gruden are going to do great. And I'm so excited for them to go to Vegas, but I'm not going there. And I'm not going to play shortstop for the Nationals either tonight. So of course, having a little fun with it. He said, I have a job to do and we're really looking forward to the season and what we're going to be doing this off the field and future stadiums in Washington. So I don't know if you heard this news, but when you hear that Bruce Allen isn't going over to the Oakland Raiders, I mean, how do you think that stares for Washington Redskins fans here? How are our odds looking with him still at the helm?
I mean, if you're looking for that point of view, I mean, yeah, I mean, he's not going this year, but yeah, there's right. always next year. I mean, it's especially yeah. in the NFL, things can change so much. So yeah, he said the right words now. I didn't think he was going to go this year. If he does jump ship and go to the silver and black and wants to see Cirque du Soleil shows in Vegas, I think he goes the year that they do open up. I don't think he goes now because no one knows what the how the transition is going to go. And so I was actually a little bit pleased on how he said it. I mean, nothing happened. They're still 40-1 to win the Super Bowl, Washington. And I like their draft. I like their draft. I like Payne, the defensive tackle of Alabama. I always tell people, if you're getting someone from Alabama in a first-round pick, you know they're NFL ready. But I really like the running back they got from LSU, Darius Geis. I think he's going to be I thought that was a better selection at that time than actually Deron Payne. I mean, granted, you got Payne for number one pick, but I think the running back is going to help all the offensive line, the quarterbacks, because I think this Darius Geis is going to be ready to go. And you got two SEC guys that drafted one and two. And like I said, if those two schools, you know those two guys are going to be ready to go. So I think they did it. I think they had a really good draft. I think they're going to be very competitive, and I would not be shocked if they're going to be still floating around, maybe getting a wild card spot.
Nice. Okay, that's the positive. And I know everyone in D.C. is going to be excited to hear that. It's good that you said they had a successful draft because I felt the same way. And a lot of people were very, very pleased with Mr. Doug Williams, his first year in his expanded role with the team. And the Redskins fans, I feel like there's a new breath of life and that the postseason might be near and dear because there were questions with Alex Smith coming in, of course, as the quarterback, and Kirk Cousins getting paid all that good money to go out to Minnesota. But I think the Redskins are in good hands. I'm not going to say Super Bowl because I'm a sports reporter and I can't say that because I don't look at odds like you, but I just kind of know the general odds of them doing that. But I just say Bruce Allen is back. Redskins fans, you have to deal with it, like it or not. But I say give him another chance. It's a new season, and it's a fresh start. But a fresh start for the Redskins might not be just what people are about to give them, Raphael, because on Wednesday, actually, it came out some negative news, and the New York Post actually broke this story, I mean, the New York Times, where they actually talked about how Washington Redskins cheerleaders were required to pose topless for a photo shoot back in 2013 while spectators and sponsors of the team looked on. So basically, they said that the cheerleaders were, after the photo shoot where they had to pose topless in front of these big sponsors and spectators, that some of them were required to attend a nightclub event as escorts for some of the team's male sponsors. Now, the cheerleaders said there was no sex involved, but they felt the team was, quote, pimping us out, end quote. Incidents occurred during a week-long trip to Costa Rica for which the cheerleaders were not paid. Now, this caused a lot of stir on social media, as I'm sure you could imagine, because people were like, you know, what is going on with NFL teams that this is happening? And, you know, are cheerleaders being protected? So when you hear that story, Raphael, you know about the Washington Redskins organization, what are your immediate thoughts?
My original thoughts came in 2013 and 2018 are probably almost 50 mm-hmm. years difference. I mean, if this happened, let's say over right after the football season, then it would be a huge uproar, firings, just major heads would be rolling. And not saying that 2013 it was okay to do it, but I'm just saying the times we live in now, if this happened, let's say a couple of months ago, wow, I think this would be all over CNN.
Oh,
ESPN,
yeah, the wildfire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this would be huge. But in 2013, we didn't have a major 24-hour media release of what's going on in the world today. So for me, that's when I was reading it, I'm like, wow, that's horrible. I can't believe that happened. And then my original thoughts was, wow, this was like last month. This would have been huge. This would have been... We probably wouldn't have been talking right now because they would probably want you to cover just 24 hours of this.
Of that, so right.
It's sad to say that 2013 and 2018 are totally, like I say, almost 50-year difference if you're looking at it now, the way we're handling stuff in the news. But that was my first instincts on it. And it's sad because 2013 should be the same year as 2018. It was wrong. It should still be rolling and stuff like that. But the times we live in now, it would have been crazy to see if that happened a month ago.
Oh, my gosh. And honestly, when I heard the story, I mean, first it broke my heart just to know that these young ladies were, you know, put into a situation like this. And I know it was older, but that's why I think the important thing to take from it is that lessons need to be learned now. Cheerleaders need to be respected. And NFL teams need to be supervised better so that incidents like this don't happen. Because I'm sure it's not the only one. It just happened to come out. But the timing of it, I think, also was good that it came out now with the NFL draft just happening, because all eyes are kind of still on football. But it sheds a light that the culture needs to change if that is what's happening, because that's not the cheerleaders are not there for that type of stuff, right? They're there to cheer on the team. You know, yes, do events and stuff like that, but never be put in uncomfortable situations. You never want to hear about that. And then also, you don't want kind of that black eyesore on your organization. And I think that's kind of what the story did. It'll be interesting to see how the team responds and how
the
they
sad part is
try.
I'm sure it's probably it probably happened to other teams as well. That's the sad part.
And that's the scary part, right? And we just don't know about it. It just so happened, right, that former cheerleaders told this story, but I'm sure it has. I'm sure it has. And it's so sad, you know, to think about. But again, everybody needs to be protected, but this should not be happening. It should not be happening. It should have never happened. But especially, you bring up a great point, especially now, I think if it came out, it would be madness. It would be madness, especially with the current state that we live in. And in sports, it's unacceptable anywhere, but I think sports has been a standard bearer, and they really need to say enough is enough. It cannot happen. It's just simple to me. It's known that there's no explanation they can give as to why something like this can even happen to me. It's ridiculous. So hopefully that gets handled. All right, now let's move on to a brighter note. We're going to talk about NBA playoffs as we move on to Mike Helke's Across the Nation segment. And, of course, I know the NBA probably has you very busy right now with your job, but we're going to go over some playoff scores from Tuesday, which was the first day of May. The Cavaliers and the Raptors duking it out in the East and in the overtime game that the Cavaliers, led by LeBron James, won by 1 point. 113 to 112. What a game that was. And honestly, if you had watched this game, the majority of the first half, it was all Raptors, right? We had DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. They were doing their thing, right? They were doing what we expected them to do. By the end of the first quarter, they were up by 14, and it seemed like things, you know, were good. But then right before the half, the Cavaliers, they came back alive. LeBron James was LeBron James, and Jeff Green, shout out to Georgetown, was doing his thing. And J.R. Smith, you know, was knocking down jumpers, and they looked back alive. And then the second half came and the Raptors again built an early lead. But it's really the end of that game that got crazy, where the Cavs, you know, pulled it even with just under 30 seconds to play, of course, by who? LeBron James in the jumper. Did you have a chance to watch this game, Raphael, at all?
Yeah, it was nuts. I mean, just it reminded me, I was born and raised in the Midwest in Chicago, and I remember the bad boy days, and just reminded me when the Bulls were trying to get over the hump with the Detroit Pistons, and they just couldn't. Watching the fourth quarter, I thought I was watching the game at the old Detroit Palace, the Madison Palace, where I thought I saw Rick Mahorn out there and the microwave. That's what that game reminded me of, that maybe I thought it was maybe Toronto's year. to get over that hump. But what I saw, and I do believe LeBron, he did not have a good game. He was horrible at the free throw line. He had some bad turnovers in the second half, and it wasn't for Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, and even Kevin Love. Granted, he had a horrible first half, but he hit some big threes and got some big rebounds in the fourth quarter to get him that victory. So I totally agree with what LeBron said. He played a horrible game. If you watch that game and watch just him, he did not have a LeBron James game. So if they could win that game with LeBron James having that bad of a game, I can't believe I'm going to have to eat crow, because I thought Toronto was going to be able to surpass them and beat them, and LeBron puts on a Philadelphia 76ers jersey next year, but maybe not.
Ooh, you're going to get people excited with that one. But as you said, in their series against the Wizards, the Raptors have been playing some great basketball. And at the beginning of this game, it just looked like they had it in the bag. But then LeBron James and the Cavs showed up to play. And as you said, Kevin Love, he had to come up in the second half. He didn't start off well. But then J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, as you said, Jeff Green, Tristan Thompson, they all combined for 79 points. And, yes, LeBron didn't have a LeBron game, because we know LeBron is, like, super stat numbers. But he did have a triple-double. He finished with 26 points, 11 rebounds, and 13 assists. But that was – what a game. And I think in the East, far too often we complain that there's not enough intense games like that. But that game gave you everything that you want as a basketball fan. And I thank them both for such a great game. And honestly, just even in overtime, when you have to think about it, it was crazy. It really came down to that final possession. The Raptors couldn't get the shot to fall, and then the Cavs escaped with that one-point win. But what a game. But staying on the Cavs, Raphael, Kevin Love is the big news with the Cavs, because it was announced that he will remain the Cavs starting center, which Cleveland coach Tyronn Lue told reporters on Wednesday. Now, if you've been following Love, he has started at the five spot throughout the playoffs, but he has struggled in postseason play, as we kind of just talked about, where he's only averaging 10.9 points per game, which is well below his season average of 17.6 and 31.9% shooting. So when you hear this news and that they want to keep Kevin Love at the center, even though he says, he's comfortable playing forward and that's where he's played his whole career, what do you think about that move?
I don't mind bringing Tristan Thompson off the bench. He's coming off the bench back-to-back games and had really, really good games. So maybe their mindset is, okay, he's bringing us what we need off the bench. And so I don't mind that at all. I'm actually a little bit shocked that Larry Nance Jr. didn't play at all in that game. So that's one that probably gave me a little circle. Maybe, I don't know if maybe he's injured. I haven't heard anything. But I'm a little bit shocked on that they didn't bring out Larry Nance Jr. But I'm okay with Kevin Love still being at the center position and bringing Tristan Thompson off the bench, because he's produced off the bench, so I don't mind that at all. So I think Love is – his thumb is not 100%. I think that's why he's struggling.
Right. You could tell something, and it seems like something's not completely 100% with him. And as you said, Tristan Thompson has been playing well off the bench so far in postseason play. He's found his offensive rhythm, which is all you can ask for him, especially in the Cavs' last two games. But you have to go back when he just scored 3 points in their first five playoff contests. It was crazy, right? He was struggling. But then
I think he was being more punished than struggling.
Okay. And that's a good point. But then the back-to-back double-doubles. So it's like Tristan Thompson is alive again, and now he's not just Khloe Kardashian's baby daddy. It's like, you're remembering the man can play basketball. And it's great to see what he's done for Cleveland. But I'm not mad at Kevin. I know he doesn't want to play it, but guess what? It's working for now, and Cleveland wants to get back to the final. So, hey, keep on. Not mad at it. But actually, I do want to get to something else that's happening in the playoffs, and this is something that a lot of people are talking about. And it is some of the incidents that have been happening with players and fans. And so it seems like things are getting really scrappy. And, of course, there hasn't been much about – we talked about the malice in the palace before, but people are talking about some of these altercations that are happening. We talked about the Cavs and their overtime victory over the Toronto Raptors. But Drake, the rapper Drake, actually verbally got into it with Kendrick Perkins, who was the backup center for the Cavs, who wasn't active for the game but clearly ready for action. They actually had to be separated before the matter escalated. And then, you have to go back to the incidents. Russell Westbrook, his altercation with fans in Salt Lake City during the first round playoff series between Oklahoma City Thunder and the Utah Jazz. And it's been so much going on, it seems like. And for the NBA, they haven't had, it seems like, this many incidences in one season since the 2009-2010 season. So when you see all these things going on with the fans and, let's say, celebrities because of Drake, I mean, what do you think has changed in the NBA that we're all getting into our feelings so much?
Well, I think it's just the way the NBA is right now. I think there's a lot of you hurt my feelings. I'm mad now compared to back in the day. I grew up in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that, where the guys were so tough that you won't want to say anything right now. Come on, Drake, if you're really going to pick a fight, how about Jose Calderon, maybe Clarkson? You might be able to win that fight, but why would you pick a fight against that guy? I did some fictional odds on that. And I made Drake a huge underdog, a 30-1 underdog versus Kendra Person, who was minus 8,000 if they ever fought. I think if you're a little bit more concerned, I think you might need to look at the Draymond and his antics with Golden State more than anything of Drake and Kendra. Yeah. I think that was just a heated moment. I think Draymond, he just plays with his emotions, and I don't think he really thinks he. I don't think he's doing it to really hurt someone. I just think he's so emotional. He just can't control that. I don't think he was really going to do anything to Rondo or Anthony Davis in those last two games. But I would be the Draymond and Charles Barkley, I think that's all fun. And it got people to talk about other things, even though Draymond would crush Charles Barkley, because I've seen Charles Barkley in Vegas all the time, and he can't move that quickly. So Draymond would be a huge minus 6,000 on that boxing match. Barkley would be 25-1 plus money.
Oh,
but I'm more worried about Draymond, just because he's not a bad guy. I've seen him a couple times in Vegas. I met him a couple times. He's a really nice guy. But when he's on this court, he has all his motions just out there. He doesn't hide them.
Yep.
And I think that's what, and I think that's why people hate him, because I hear right after the game he's just like a totally different person than when he's on the court.
Right. I mean, he just plays with the emotion of the game. I know when the Wizards played them the season on Golden State, it was a whole bunch of stuff going on between the two teams, and they were not liking each other. But as you said, I mean, I think that's how we know Draymond Green is as a player. And you brought up Charles Barkley, and I think it was a joke too when he said, "I just want somebody to punch him in the face." As we know, Draymond Green, you know, a lot of times people ask him if he got his game from Charles Barkley, and a lot of times he says, you know, no, I like Charles, he says, you know, and he was undersized like me at my position. But, you know, my game is my game. You watch Charles, but that wasn't who he followed after. But the thing with Green and Rondo, as you said, I think it's just they're in the heat of the moment, like you said. I know some people don't like Draymond for it, but at the same time, I think he brings this intensity to the game. And when you're going into the game and you're going to play against the Golden State Warriors and you know he's going to be there, I think you just bring a whole other type of game, because you're not only doing the physical basketball part, you have to train your mind mentally, right, when you know you're about to deal with somebody like him, so you can keep yourself in check and your emotions right. So hopefully your team can come out victorious, right? I mean, I think it's just that simple. But, you know, Charles Barkley, a lot of times, though, he says a lot of good things to get social media popping. And, of course, he did with that Draymond Green comment. But as you said, a lot of people were talking about if they ever were to get in a fight, and Draymond got more votes to actually win that fight. Just an interesting point.
By far. It wouldn't even be close. I think the closest fight would be if Draymond fought Rondo. I made Rondo a small favorite because Rondo's just got that mean look on him. I don't trust Rondo. I think even though he's smaller than Draymond, but I'm going to have to make Rondo the favorite.
That is too funny, too funny. Well, staying with basketball, I want to go to my biggest headlines in sports, where Steph Curry was back in action. So it's good to say that for game two. And we were just talking about the Warriors and Pelicans. But basically, Steph Curry was Steph Curry, Raphael. I mean, he came into the game, made his impact quick. Because almost immediately after he checked in, what did he do? He drilled a three-pointer, of course, because he's Steph Curry, and no one was surprised. But what a game it was. And honestly, that was another intense game. And I think if you take out Steph Curry, that final outcome of the game is a little bit more – might have been a little bit more different. I mean, the Warriors did come out winning 121-116, but Curry was, I mean, plus 26 on the night. And he was just playing lights out basketball. 28 points, including 5 3-pointers. How did you feel to see Steph Curry back on the court?
I mean, Steph Curry did Steph Curry things. It didn't shock me. I didn't think he was going to come out. I didn't think he was going to come out rusty. I thought he might be a little bit slow, like his legs. But a shooter is always going to have their shooter legs, especially on how he performs. So I wasn't worried about that. I think the biggest thing that's caught my eye. Mm-hmm. The Golden State Warriors shot 27 free throws, made 22 of them. And if you're the Pelicans, you want to know why you lost that game? You were 7 for 9 at the free throw line. I mean,
yep, that was a big difference.
If you're the Pelicans, maybe go to the. I know they probably didn't get some road calls, and Anthony Davis does not get any calls at all. I feel bad for AD. I mean, he's getting hacked, and he's getting over, and people are jumping on his back, and he's not getting the star calls. It's going to be very interesting, and when they play on Friday, how many times Anthony Davis is at the free throw line. But I think if you're the Pelicans, hey, you only lost by 5. You were in the game the whole time with Steph Curry on the court. I would say take that as a mental win, because like I said, you didn't lose because Steph Curry came back. You didn't lose because he scored 28 points. You lost because you only shot 9 free throws. And the Warriors shot 27 free throws. So you have to look at that.
Yep.
Maybe drive the basket more. You're going to get home calls because you're at home these next two games. Now, if you win game three, then everyone's doing what they're supposed to. Home court's still holding. Now, if you lose game three and you shot more free throws and all that, then you might want to start planning your fishing trip or your summer vacations.
And basically, lesson learned here, free throws matter, kids. Free throws matter, because as you said, that's a huge difference in the game, and they could have been up. So it's actually a really good series. I didn't think we'll be at first, but if they keep giving us a game like they just had, we are in for a good one. I love round two of NBA playoffs. But basketball, we know, is not the only one in playoff mode right now. The NHL playoffs are also occurring, and here in D.C., everyone is talking about, that man, Alex Ovechkin, who for a while now has been often, and I think often unfairly criticized, some people say fairly, for not showing up in big games. But guess what? After Tuesday, there was none of that talk, because our Caps superstar came up huge for Washington in Game 3 of the second-round series against our arch-rivals, the Penguins. He scored the winning goal with just over a minute left in the third period and did it in a very impressive Ovi fashion. When you see these Capitals, I have to ask you, for the fans here, is this finally the year, Raphael, that they will be able to hoist that trophy?
I don't want to say hoist the trophy, but I predict them to beat the Penguins in this series. And even I had to eat some crow and put my head between my legs when they lost game one. But to winning that game yesterday at PBG Paints Arena in that fashion, where they scored 2 goals in the third period, Ovi scores with less, I don't know if it was less than a minute or whatever left time when he scored that goal. That's got to at least put the monkey one leg off your shoulder. Not the whole body, but I think one of the monkey's legs is off your shoulder, because that's a huge win. Now you can maybe try to steal another game, or now you're still alive. And now you have some huge confidence, because now you just won back-to-back games against a team that has beaten you in the playoffs
since I've
been born.
Yes, I mean, far too many times.
Yeah, it seems like Pittsburgh always beats you guys. So I think that was a huge win. And I said, I predict them to beat Pittsburgh in 7 games. I still think it's going to go 7 games. But I think that was a huge, huge, huge win for Washington at PBG Paints Arena. And for Ovi to get the win, to get the last goal, I mean, he slept well. I mean, he probably had no problem sleeping.
Yeah, I'm sure, right? And as you said, I mean, it was just, you couldn't create that. It was perfect. And I think, like, after that win, the momentum is in the Caps' hands. And as you said it earlier, I mean, we're tired of the Penguins spanking us around here in D.C., so hopefully this is the Caps' year. And hearing you say that, I hope everyone listening, we have a handicapper saying that, so take that to heart. Now staying with hockey, Tampa Bay versus Boston, the series tied at 1-1. Tell me, what are kind of the Vegas odds on this series?
Well, it's very interesting, because I think the road team can steal a game. I like Tampa Bay. I like the way they've been skating. I think they're going to be a tough out no matter what. I know Boston's at the next game at home. I'm leaning towards Tampa in this series and in the next game as well. I think their goalie play is going to be a lot better than what we've seen in the past. I just think whoever could score more goals, seems like these games, well, in the playoffs, 7 goals in one game is almost like a blink of an eye. I remember back in the old days where you would have 1-0 in NHL playoff run.
Yeah.
And I've been telling people that, and the NHL and NBA has been so much different this year. Normally we see really close, hard-fought overtime games, not that much scoring in the NHL, and it's opposite. We're seeing close NBA games, no sweeps, and then the NHL, I mean, the Sharks swept, the Knights swept their first round series, so it's almost vice versa. But I like the way Tampa has been playing. And I know their game's at the TD Garden the next game, but I'm going to lean towards Tampa, I think, to finish this series. I thought Tampa Bay win this. I just don't like the way Rastic, the Boston goaltender, has been playing in the last couple of games. I'm going to see Tampa that wins this series.
Mm. All right, we'll keep that in mind. And now let's head over to Nashville, where we have Nashville versus Winnipeg. What are the Vegas predictions for this series?
Well, we thought Nashville was going to be, I mean, everyone was betting Nashville to win it all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be a tough out. But, wow, I was totally wrong in that last game. I mean, just the way the Jets have been playing. I'm rooting for the Winnipeg Jets because my last boss, when I was at City Center at Aria in Las Vegas, when I was a sportsbook director there, was a diehard Winnipeg Jet fan. And he was probably one of the best boss I ever had. So I always root for them because I know he's dying inside, nervous and
waiting for them.
He was calling me and texting me when the Cubs were in the World Series when they finally won it. So even though I thought Nashville was going to be a tough out and I had them winning the Cup at All-Star break, because I really thought they were playing well. Wow, the Jets, what they did that last game, I'm going to say Winnipeg steals. I think this goes 7-2. I think Nashville evens up the series in game four. But I just think the Jets have too much offense. They're just too big. And give me Shelfie from Winnipeg. I think they're going to be a hard out, what I've seen so far in the playoffs. I think Winnipeg is going to continue to be playing hockey in the month of May and maybe even June.
Oh, okay. Love it. Like, high words spoken for them. So we will see if they can close it out. And now let's head over to Vegas, where you are, where we have the Golden Knights taking on the San Jose Sharks. Tell me what your thoughts are on this series.
I mean, it's got to be the Golden Knights. I mean, for what San Jose gave up, 3 goals in their last game, and then Vegas wins in overtime. That probably sucked the win out of San Jose because they had that game. They were winning 1-0, and then in the blink of an eye, it's 3-1 Vegas. In San Jose, where that's a tough place to steal a win, especially in the playoffs. San Jose has a really dedicated, loud crowd, and to steal that crowd, just like how Vegas did. I thought San Jose could have won this series, but right now, how could you fade a team that's what they're doing all season long? If this was the NBA, if this was baseball or NFL, a team that just started out and all of a sudden in the playoffs and could win that shit, this would mm-hmm. be breaking news. This
it
could
would.
Be like Fox and CNN if this was the NFL or baseball.
So
NBA,
true.
But I know it's hockey, and it's probably the fourth or fifth sport in the United States, depending on who you talk
mm-hmm.
to. But what Vegas is doing out in the desert is remarkable, and it's going to go down in sports history. It's probably one of the best stories in all sports.
Yeah, and I agree. They don't get the attention they deserve. They've been doing some remarkable, remarkable playing out there. And as you said, I mean, they're playing lights out there. So I would not be surprised if Vegas makes it out. So I say, keep all eyes on the Golden Knights. All right, now we're having some hockey.
The goaltender Fleury, I mean, he's made his experience. I've heard his playoff experience and talking to the guys in the locker room has been far none to probably effective. And I think with Fleury behind the net and what he's doing behind the net, I think we might see a Stanley Cup in Vegas. I don't know if they're going to win this, but I think we might see them in it.
Yeah, and that would still be an accomplishment in itself. I mean, what they've been able to do, again, remarkable. I think you said it best. It needs to go down in sports history. All right, now we're heading from hockey to the White House, where we have President Trump and some comments on the World Cup. So if you are not up to date listening, for the second time in a week, yes, in 1 week, President Trump on Monday actually urged other countries to support, of course, the North American bid to host the 2026 World Cup. And basically, he again implied that there might be consequences for those who did not show support. So the comments were actually made during a news conference in the Rose Garden, which raised new questions about Mr. President Trump and his input and, again, his relationship with the political constituents and how, if it will, interfere in the bidding process, which some say could jeopardize the joint bid by the United States, Mexico, and Canada. So when you first heard this news, what was your thoughts, Raphael?
Well, if we're going to have sections in Mexico, Canada, and U.S., how are we supposed to get to Mexico if he's going to build a wall to watch a game? I guess was one of my biggest biggest storylines. But, I mean, we all know how corrupt FIFA is as it is right now. I mean, for what Trump said, it's going to be hard. Anytime I see a FIFA story, I just cringe. And now Trump is getting into the World Cup and FIFA organization.
Who saw that
makes me
coming?
Cringe because if there's any organization that's so corrupted, I always tell people who think boxing is corrupted and all that, go talk to the FIFA guys.
Yeah.
Go talk to people who are diehard soccer fans, and I'll tell you about corruption. So when I heard that story, I'm like, oh, no, not another black eye for FIFA and the World Cup, now that Trump's getting involved in it. That was my first instinct. But, I mean, I kind of understand why he said it because of the corruption, but you're just adding more fuel to the fire.
Right, fuel to the fire,
Let's just play this World Cup, see how it goes, make sure there's no problems, because we already know the problems Russia has over there as it is in this one. Let's just play it, see how it goes, and then we'll get back to who's going to host the next one.
Well, I mean, there's so much to this. It's such a complex thing. But just adding on to what happened, last Thursday, President Trump actually praised a bid on Twitter where he added remarks that some observers actually saw as a threat when he tweeted this. He said the U.S. has put together a strong, in caps, a strong bid with Canada and Mexico for the 2026 World Cup. It would be a shame if countries that we always support were to lobby against the U.S. bid. Why should we be supporting these countries when they don't support us, including at the United Nations? And then if that is not enough for you and you haven't been caught up, he also made remarks about international trade while he met with the Nigerian president at the White House. He said, I hope all African countries and countries throughout the world, that we will also be supporting you and that they will likewise support us in our bid along with Canada and Mexico for the 2026 World Cup. So basically, it seems like on every platform, he's making sure everybody and their mom knows how important this bid is and why we deserve their support, in his own words. So there's a lot going on with this. But the host of the 2026 World Cup will be named June 13th. So keep that date in mind. And that's a day before the opening match of the 2018 World Cup in Russia. So I hope everybody keeps that in mind. So lots of that. But now I want to go to Mike Kelsey's Are You Serious Right Now segment, where Tom Brady actually made headlines because he actually came out and made comments on kneeling for the national anthem, which I think surprised a lot of folks, because if you know Tom Brady, you don't see him get into many, I'll say, controversial issues, I think, like this. So Tom Brady actually just did a live Q&A with Jim Gray, and basically he talked about everything from the NFL and his future in the NFL to kneeling during the national anthem. He said that the kneeling debate sparked a lot of great conversations in the locker room and meeting rooms, and he said, quote this, I have a lot of friends that I've played with, and everyone's from different backgrounds. Everyone's from different parts of the country. Everyone has different stories, and you got to have respect for everybody. You got to have respect for everybody's opinion and the way that they want to present themselves and the opportunity that they have to make a difference. So when you hear that quote and you hear it coming from Tom Brady, what were your initial thoughts, Raphael?
That I was kind of shocked that he went there and added that topic. Normally, I thought he would be skating on thin ice or avoid it.
Right.
But I kind of agree. I've talked to a lot of athletes. I've talked to a lot of veterans and stuff like that. And you hear both sides. And I see both sides. So I try not to really dive into it because it's such a sensitive subject. And like I said, with the cheerleaders thing that we mentioned, if this was 2013, we all might be totally different. Talking about the kneeling down than we are 2018. So it's such a sensitive subject. So I don't see how I'm still kind of blown away that he did answer it. And I thought he answered it well. I thought he answered it truthfully. You could tell the way he was answering that he wasn't trying to hide anything. And I do believe that athletes are talking in the locker room. And I do believe that that they're having big really deep down discussions. So I was actually a little bit pleased that he went there, because to me, when I saw it, I'm like, wow, he's actually speaking. That you could tell when someone says, oh, we talk about that in a locker room. You're like, no, you didn't. But the way he was presenting it, I believed him, and I do believe him. So at least he had a positive talk. I mean, we're not going to have any positive answers or any good outcomes on this. I don't think in the next couple of years and all that, maybe when stuff dies down in the world. But for right now, I didn't mind how he approached the answer.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, for Tom Brady, I was so in shock that he even addressed this because, right, usually this is something he'd shy away from, right, because it's really controversial. But I did like how he answered it. And I think both sides, no matter where you stand, you have to respect what he said. And then also him coming out, honestly, it gave me a new respect for him because it's not easy to talk about controversial issues, especially when you're an athlete and you have so many things weighing in on that. So the fact that he addressed it, I thought was great because he also added this. He said, sports for him have been the most unifying part of his life. And he said that it's important that the NFL should bring people together. But he said that football players are ultimately entertainers and watching the sport should help make fans get away from their real world problems. So it seems like, you know, he's just, I feel like he's kind of in the middle, but he knows he has to deal, of course, with both sides of this issue. But as you said, it just seemed like a genuine answer from Tom Brady. So I truly.
Yeah, I was hoping he would tell me who where Dez Bryant was going to sign next, or his Gronk was coming back.
That's
what I was
hoping.
That would have
been good. Yeah,
we have odds.
You can
bet if where Dez Bryant will have a play next year. And your Washington Redskins are +580, so you can jump on that if you think Bryant's going to be a Redskin.
Ooh, okay. You're giving all the good stuff away on my show. This is great. And Raphael, I hope you don't mind, but let's end every single show with my Woman Crush Everyday segment. I am a big proponent of women in sports and making sure they get highlighted. And I saw a story that touched my heart, and this is why I wanted to highlight this young lady. So ESPN the magazine actually did a great story on Georgia outfielder Kendall Burton, who, oh my gosh, just her story is incredible. But she is a softball player, and I'm going to just kind of take you through her story and to why I'm honoring her. So she was 18 years old. This was a passage directly from the magazine. Kendall Burton was just 18 years old. 6 days earlier, she had played her first college softball game for the University of Texas at San Antonio, overcoming so much to get there. The 23 surgeries, the failed bone grafts, the ruthless kids poking fun at her parents, and now she was having a stroke. As her dad raced her to the hospital, no one knew what that night eventually would mean, how she would struggle to read preschool picture books, how her softball career would nearly come to an end, or how it would take her from San Antonio to Stillwater, Oklahoma, to Athens, Georgia, where she would become the emotional heartbeat of a top team eyeing a spot in the Women's College World Series. So she was born with a cleft lip and palate. But basically, I'm highlighting her because she basically said this. I didn't go through all this hell with my surgeries and stuff not to play. Kendall Burton underwent 23 surgeries by the age of 18, and this young lady is still going out there and playing softball. I think she's an inspiration to us all to never give up. She was, ever since she was born, I mean, people thought nothing, unfortunately, would come of her because she was born with these, what doctors consider physical deformities. And look at her living out her dream and being an inspiration and an emotional heartbeat or her softball team. When you hear this story, I mean, Raphael, what is going through your mind?
You never tell anybody that they can't do something.
Yes.
If you have the will, you'll have the way. If you have a goal, go try to grab that goal. That's a perfect example right there. And I'm a true big believer of that. If you tell someone they can't, a lot of times people just sit down and say, okay, I can't. But there's always those people that you read these stories and say, hey, people tell me I can't, and I proved them wrong. So
right.
that's what I got out of it, and that's a great story. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I had to highlight her. When I heard that, I'm like, how can I not talk about this on my show? And honestly, I think we both know the NCAA is under a lot of scrutiny right now, but stories like this that remind me and I think everyone how sports can bring us together and how so many people live out the dream through the sports that they play. So I give Kendall all the props. I wish her the best of luck. And as you said, I mean, I hope everyone knows, do not give up. Do not give up. Continue to chase after your dream. Raphael, thank you so much for joining me. This was a fun show. I can't believe the hour went so fast.
I know. I mean, anytime you want me to come back on, I always love talking stuff, especially in different cities. I've been to Washington many, many times in the Maryland area,
nice.
So I know how diehard you guys with your Skins and your Maryland Terps and
Go
the
Terps.
Wizards and So and I've been to a Mystics game. I've been to a Mystics game.
I'm giving
game
you props for that. Wonderful.
So it's a great city. It's a great town. And it's a sports town. And like I said, thank you for having me on.
No, thanks so much. And we'd love to have you back and maybe even in studio if you are back in the area. And I love that you mentioned the Mystics are actually getting a new stadium built here.
Yes,
they'll be
you
in
guys
South
are.
D.C. Yeah. And so there we go, talking about stadium talk. And, of course, the Wizards, the Go-Go, their G League team. will actually play there, and the Wizards will use that as a practice facility. So it's kind of exciting times here, I think, too, in D.C. to get that G League team for the Wizards franchise. I think some people think that's long overdue. And, of course, here we're rooting for the Caps. We're rooting for the Nationals. We're rooting for the Washington Redskins. So things are looking out. And actually, while I have you on that, when we talk about Vegas odds, you mentioned the Maryland Terrapins. And, of course, I think Georgetown Hoyas are another big team here. College basketball odds. Are we going to – can we go dancing next year, Raphael? Or is it too early to say?
I don't know about dancing. You might. I mean, I think the Big Ten is like Purdue might be in a little rebuild. Indiana's still in a little bit of rebuild. I think Northwestern is going to get younger. I would say yes. I think you guys can make the tournament. I like the way you guys ended the season. I think you have some good recruits. So I'll say you have a very, very good shot to go dancing. Winning it all, cutting the nets down. I'm sorry. I love you guys, but I can't say you're not cutting the nets down.
Oh, man, I just wanted some positive news to end the show. No, but I appreciate you giving your expert analysis. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously because there's always another play.
Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM Fox Sports Radio.